Hello, this is Matthew Tombers, and you're listening to WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Starbucks of Columbiaville, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation.
Welcome to the Singularity Show. Everyone is missing from the studio today. They're all in remote. Let's hear from them. Can you hear?
We can hear.
Hello. We are broadcasting live from Skynet's incubation chamber, also known as Peter Thiel's woodshed. Nobody let them know we're here.
It's the bunker. It's the bunker.
The bunkers.
Yes, we're hiding in the bunker, so that way when they unleash their AI and it starts destroying society, we've already beaten them to it. Yes, folks, that is their actual plan, in case you didn't hear it.
They can't destroy society if we destroy it first.
I think that's the plan. I think the AI is going to mess us up so bad that we just basically go into, like, a year-long purge night where just the strongest of us survive, and then we can live on the crumbs of the wealthy as we live to entertain them. So, on that bit of sunshine, how's everybody doing?
Oh, just as cheery as could be.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
You know, bearing up under the circumstances.
Hey, that's good. That's all you can ask for. Ben, how you doing?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm not doing too bad. Still alive, still human. We have also phoning in from afar. Mackenzie, how are you?
Good. I think.
Oh, she's boiling under the surface, folks. We will get back to her. Cody, how are you?
Doing great. hiding out in the deep woods of the Northeast.
Smart, smart. That'll be one of the last refuges before the AI closes in. Greg is not in here. Are you here?
Who? Greg is in Cape May, last we knew.
Oh.
I saw him in the list. He's not in here.
He avoids that pathway for some reason.
I don't blame
confused
him.
Confused by it. I don't blame him. I was confused by it today. I was just lost, but we figured it out.
Okay. Anybody got anything they want to bring up before I dive into, I guess, the list of links we got here?
Yes. Never buy a Saab unless you're really into technology and you love fixing things, because 75 fuses on a car is excessive in four different boxes. 75. It's fun for me. I'm like, oh, here's the problem, here's where your vampire power is sucking all the power from here, but I wouldn't recommend it for amateurs.
It was the American Saabs. The original ones didn't have that problem.
Yeah, well, they didn't have 100 fuses. They had 5 fuses, and
they barely had an electrical system.
But that's my 2 cents. I would. It's fun though, man. That thing rips. The turbo.
Oh. Yeah, Saabs figured out turbo pretty good. They burn out, but you know they work well.
It's like a sewing machine. There's no turbo lag. It just goes zero to red line. And you just pull more and more and more.
From what I hear with Saabs, it should feel like it's already spun up when you hit it.
Yes. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, but unless you're an enthusiast, do not buy it. If you are an enthusiast, yeah, have fun, because they are fun cars.
I saw you post that thing. I suppose nobody bid, and you were interested?
No, not at all. No, no. Somebody needs to buy that in Catskill.
Somebody that's really into electronics.
It's not that, it's the thing about having 80, 70, 80 fuses compared to, say, just the thing where you plug in an ODB2 connector and figure out where the problem is. It doesn't take much thought to find out what broke on it, because that fuse for that one function is broke or is doing its thing. And yeah. So when you find out where vampire power is, you just pull them one at a time until a vampire power disappears. You're like, oh, there's the problem. So it's great if you're looking for a problem to find. It'll get you there quicker than, say, an ODB2 readout where you're trying to decipher it, right? But
oh, my God.
I don't know. There's
were you just, like, bolt metering?
Right?
No. Put an ammeter, put a multimeter on the battery between the the negative and the ground, showed where there was a amp draw above where it should have been, and I pulled them out one at a time, and I discovered that the radio and its separate amplifier were drawing 150 milliamps each. I don't think that was a problem. Something else is sticking on and drawing a couple amps at a time and killing the battery.
Yeah, that was it keeping its like its radio and its settings in place.
Yeah, that's the settings, and 300 milliamps isn't that much, but I think it was pulling a couple amps off, like some circuit was holding itself on and draining the battery completely. I don't know what that is yet, but that's a problem. It's like you have this little key fob. You open up the door. Hopefully your battery didn't drain too much. Your door will not open if you don't have a key, you're locked out. Secondly, if you don't have enough power, you can't turn it on because the key fob has no key on it. It's all, RFID or whatever. Yeah, the key fob literally turns. In old car, you put on an accessory, right? You have accessory, you have ignition, start, right? Two positions.
Yeah.
You get in the car with a fob, it turns on the accessory, and it starts drawing 2.5 to 3.7 amps in preparation for you starting the battery. If any of those circuits stick on, your battery's going to go dead down to 1 volt in a week flat.
And this happens just when you sit in the car.
Just when you open the door, it puts itself on ignition or accessory mode, and all those things turn on and draw 2.5 to 3.5 amps.
Okay. Well, those are usually there should be a timer for that, so that it times out if you don't activate the key within a certain amount of time.
There should be. When I first started looking at it, it wasn't just the radio drawing 300 milliamps. There was like 600 something milliamps being drawn. There was something else being drawn. that I haven't found yet. And that, yeah, it's just, what's wrong with a key with two positions? That's my thought. It only causes more problems for yourself.
Oh, that's so 20th century.
Switches? Why?
Jeez, why would you use a key? What century are you from?
Like being stuck in the middle of nowhere? Welcome to the 21st century.
No, sir. I like having a car that I can fix with, you know, a couple of pantyhose and some duct tape.
Yeah.
You can't do that when the strut breaks through the back of the car into your cabin, buddy.
That's what the duct tape was for.
That's what a welder's
rest,
for.
Rest in peace, Sheila. Rest in peace.
Wow.
Aw.
Sounds like a bunch Cody's of car talking guys. About...
Anyway, you had a list, Joe.
Not on purpose. A list? I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk
about radioactive wasps.
Radioactive what?
What? Radioactive wasps.
Oh, what?
The horrors Oops. Do not stop coming, Brian.
What?
They don't stop coming.
So they bite you and then you get radiation poisoning, or they're just slightly radioactive?
No. They just keep to themselves. They were found at a South Carolina nuclear facility that is now a Superfund site.
Oh,
it was
God.
Used to produce weaponry during the 50s. But it was shut down, and due to, like, not – there wasn't, like, a breach or a leak, but the wasps found their way into an area that had what's considered legacy radiation, and their entire wasp nest had to be terminated and removed as radioactive waste.
So I like the one where they didn't worry about the wasps because the wasps don't travel far. It was the birds. Did you catch that one? It was the radioactive bird poop.
Do you mean that's by government drones?
No. Good old fashioned birds. You know that was the. It used to be such good science fiction. It's just now reality.
Yeah.
That birds are spreading radioactive.
Yeah.
Well, you know, going back to the wasps, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, whenever a wasp would fly in, it would really light up a room.
What? God. Why?
All right. I'll log off.
It's fine.
Hey, Max, since you are already talking about bugs of one kind, can you talk about what was going on at Microsoft?
Heavy sigh.
That was a deep sigh.
Heavy sigh.
It's
cleansing
just...
sigh.
I'm trying to think of civil words to string together to make sentences to explain this. So, all right, let me just start a little bit. Okay.
Come on now, we can do it.
A week or two ago, I would say, ProPublica did some investigative journalism and found that there was an extremely small program, and by small, I mean very few people knew about this program.
Hello? I think you broke up.
She went away.
It made her such a rage that it took out her internet.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think an angry stare takes down your internet where they are. That's okay. I'm sure she'll be back.
She dropped? Damn it.
Yeah.
Big tech was silencing me.
Oh, no, she was talking the whole time, and she thought we could hear her.
No, I was just, I stopped. I just said big tech was silencing me.
Ha! Wouldn't be surprised these days. You're right up there with Colbert, you're good.
Yeah, right.
It's interesting that Microsoft was hired Chinese workers.
Wait, Joe, Wait, I didn't get there yet. Oh, and my connection's bad. Can you check yours? Because oh, you know what? It's because I switched over to my VPN. Hold
you
on.
Sound good.
So the moral of the story is it's okay. The North Koreans said it was fine.
Yep, everything is good.
They vouch for him.
Yeah, Peskov said everything's good. They didn't see anything on the up and up. Jeez.
God.
Okay. Hello.
Yes, you're good.
Yes, hey.
Okay, we did it. So Microsoft was running an extremely small, and by small, I mean very few people knew about this program, in which Microsoft hired U.S. citizens who could gain security clearances to be working under Microsoft as something called a digital escort. Now,
I already got a couple of those. Never mind. Sorry.
So what these digital escorts would do is that they would be paired with engineers based in China. And because, of course, they couldn't gain U.S. security clearances, these digital escorts would share their screen, essentially, with Chinese engineers. And the engineers would say, okay, now run this command. And the really alarming thing, I mean, so many things are alarming here, but one major aspect is that these digital escorts were not technical. And even if they were, they weren't at the level of, I mean, of course, because if they were at the same level as these Chinese engineers, why would you hire these Chinese engineers in the first place? But what's really interesting is that this program was so small that it was almost, I think it went on for about a decade. And very few Microsoft leadership members or, you know, people on the leadership team at Microsoft knew about it. Almost every Microsoft client didn't know about it, including, and, you know, this is where the clearance comes in, U.S. military. These escorts were paired with Chinese engineers specifically for military projects in the Department of Defense.
So the DOD was employing Chinese people to do the work for them with a dumbass interpreter in between?
Yep. Who said, okay, so I'm running this command, right? Oh, okay. And I just hit enter here, right? And interestingly enough, I'm not sure if we're aware of the SharePoint incident.
Do tell.
Okay. So there was a massive breach. I mean, Microsoft has been having so many security problems, but most recently there was a massive vulnerability that was found in which hackers could attack SharePoint sites via an unauthenticated RCE, so a remote code execution, which is awful. But then if you look at who actually developed this, it was not one, but two Chinese state-funded hacker groups.
Awesome.
I find that strangely reassuring.
I was going to say, does everybody feel safe now? Like,
yes.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't really matter. In the long run, it's not that big a deal. Everybody thinks that, like, Vladimir Putin owns Trump. Nah, nah, nah. Xi is the one that holds his leash. No problem. We can see it. So don't you worry. All the Chinese military's desired access to our systems has already been rendered. It's just been done quietly.
It's been so quiet that actually the Department of Defense's their previous director of the IT agency that services Department of Defense had no idea about this program. The program's been in place for a decade.
A decade!
A plus.
We're number one!
So you know the old QA method of putting one or two like ringer tests in to see how good your QA groups were? Yeah. So if these are the ones that sort of surface, can you imagine the number that are just have never seen the light of day?
See, this is why I drink.
You can't drink enough.
This right here.
It's also why Pete Hegseth drinks. Well, nowadays.
It's just what really angers me about all of this, and I got so angry, and I'm really trying to keep that in check today. Because I'm more than my anger.
Yeah.
But I can't help but feel so defeated as a security professional, because this giant of a company has made such like egregious errors. And I mean, at the stake of not just regular clients, because that's bad enough, but then you're looking at military projects. You're looking at, and like I was saying, like, this isn't just general DOD payroll info, which would already be super bad, but we're talking like military documents and plans, like in specific SharePoint items. And what gets me really upset is the fact that, I mean, this happened, what, 2 weeks ago that this came out? We've already kind of moved on. I saw on LinkedIn, someone I know who's a project manager at Microsoft just posted on LinkedIn, you know, hey, like, come join our meeting about, you know, Microsoft Entra and 101. Like, everything's all good here. Don't worry about us. I'm still getting my paycheck.
Got a little feedback there, Brian.
What's that?
We had a little feedback in there for a
second. Oh, that was me. I don't know how that got through.
Who knows?
No,
I know how it got through. It got through to you guys because I'm feeding my mic directly to you before it hits the board. You're on pre.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I know I've been talking a lot, but I can hear myself.
Yeah.
No, you're good.
I might have to change that to post fader. Or not.
Okay. What are you talking about?
If I can bring up, just to kind of piggyback on the security front, if I may.
Sure.
Because this was something else that I wanted to bring up. Unless we still want to talk Microsoft, because I don't want to just switch to the next thing like they all did. So we can talk about it still. I don't want to switch subjects.
No. Microsoft has perpetually sucked since, like, you know, forever. So it's okay.
Yeah.
But we can always come right back to Microsoft sucks.
but is there any technology company that you really can trust in terms of security?
Can you trust security at all?
RSA?
Yeah, I mean, is it
invisible tech?
But RSA, like, there's some accusations that they've weakened the algorithms for the public-private key hashing and creation. So there's that argument. Yes, yeah. I've heard that one.
So you're saying it's like just a backdoor into the whole this website's padlocked kind of scheme.
Well, is it the nature of digital technology is to be insecure?
There was a great talk that I went to. I mean, I'm going back like probably 10 years, maybe a little sooner than that. Maybe it was 2018. There was an excellent talk that someone gave. His talk was called "Temporarily Unbroken." And he likened security to a piece of glass, in that you have this magnificent piece of glass. Let's say it's stained glass. Somebody worked really hard making this beautiful. It's really thick. It's going to last a while until it doesn't. And when it doesn't, it shatters. And when it shatters, it's going to be very difficult to put pieces back together. The similarity there is with security. Something can start out being one of the most secure pieces of technology on the market until it's not, and until it becomes obsolete, or until, you know, something else becomes more secure, or until some, you know, relentless cyber criminal breaks it, or security
everything
researcher
can have a zero day.
Yes. So I almost would say, like, to say that one thing is the most secure, especially just being on, something as immortalized as radio, You know, we are on a radio show now in 2025 that, you know, I may say one thing that's true. And, you know, even something like a year from now can come out that made what I just recommended obsolete.
Yeah.
But isn't computer security a compromise in every situation? Isn't it always relative because of the human factors, right? I mean, we can't really trust the technology because of the people involved. So what, you know, what do we really expect in terms of security? You know, isn't it relative?
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at like moderate expectations for security, especially as you said, it's like you said, the people are the weak point. It's, you could go through all the trouble of actually securing your phone and making sure that like the message you send from it are through different ways are pretty damn secure. But if you send it to a person that doesn't lock up their phone, that has a phone that's got an AI agent looking over everything that's in it, compromised with viruses and who knows what other kinds of malware, your security is compromised as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, and then there is the people underneath the code, right? It's not just the person at the end who's sloppy about, you know, passwords and encryption keys and things like that.
That's why we advocate for open source software.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Yes. You know? I will say then there's also just like SSLDC, like the secure software development lifecycle, where kind of the principle there is like every step of the development lifecycle must include security checks. So that way it's not just one person, you know, vibe coding and immediately putting it out so you can download an app on the App Store. You know, ideally there are going to be teams that whose job is to kind of poke around and try to find vulnerabilities, to find ways in, to find maybe there's a, you know, an old version of TLS used or.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I can tell you it does happen. Sure,
it's going to happen, but it's not going to become like the mainstream method. That sounds expensive. It sounds like vibe coding is just easier and cheaper.
I mean, like that's my actual job is to be the person in the life cycle who tests the security of various projects. Like I'm a member of a department or a member of a team of a department that does that. And yeah, that's just one company, but that's kind of like the modernized posture of most tech companies, consulting firms, things like that.
Fun question. What tools do you use for pen testing? Do you have like proprietary scripts that you sort of built? I mean, I'm just curious now.
Oh yeah. I mean, I actually have in the background right now, I have Burp Suite. I use Burp Suite. Postman depend. I mean, it depends on what I'm testing too. I also have made my own scripts. It kind of depends, again, like on what specifically I'm testing. If it's just a general, like if it's a public website and that's kind of it, that's a wider range. Whereas if it's private, maybe it's a little different, but not too much. If it's mobile, that's also going to be different. If it's just an API I'm testing, different. It's mostly, I would say, most of my work is done with Burp Suite. I use just also Kali in general, Nmap also.
Good stuff.
I'm trying to think of what else I use. I'm like able to use whatever, whenever. So, what's that?
Wireshark.
Yes. Yep. And it's,
it's one of my favorites.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's the I also stumbled upon WireGuard last year. I was playing around with VPNs. It was kind of nice, you know? Roll your own VPN.
WireGuard's pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
You get really fancy with your own mesh VPN.
Yeah. You know, but it's really tough to realize that, you know, it's like finding climate change. You know, is computer security kind of like the same problem we've got with the weather and the climate these days. It's just not going to get better the way we're going. And it's the bad actors, right? It's the bad actors.
So I, if I may respectfully disagree with that standpoint.
Sure.
Thank you. Only because, you know, you look at these large companies, like one that comes to mind is Home Depot. They got burned. I don't even know how many years ago they got burned real good. And guess what they did? They started investing millions upon millions of dollars in their cybersecurity department. And I mean, even still, it's considered one of the, you know, I wouldn't say one of the greatest, but I mean, in terms of general consumer store, you know, where you're not selling like a niche privacy product. You know, same thing with Target. Same thing with, oh, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. Anyway, the whole point is, oh, Uber was another huge one. I do, so I said that I respectfully disagree. I actually partially agree with you in that I think that people don't really take it seriously. But they don't take it seriously until they've been burned badly enough.
Just like, hey, Joe, what time is it?
Oh, it sounds like it's time to say it's you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Catskill, Acre, Hudson.
Okay.
So I was just kind of letting Mac just roll with it.
As a security professional, what's your impression of Apple products and the security?
Come on.
No, come on.
We give it the raspberry, but you might be surprised.
What, me do the raspberry?
He asked you.
No.
Joe is raspberrying, but that's hold it. And then there's the Raspberry Pi, but that's something else altogether.
Something that I will say, I think people are extremely quick to kind of poo-poo Apple as a, you know, as a product that's beneath them, and that's fine. I think especially people among the, like the Linux community, I think, kind of see themselves as more like god tier compared to Apple. I just made eye contact with Cody, but I said that.
No, I know.
You're not like that. But
you're not wrong.
So I have found Apple to be extremely secure. I mean, I went to a conference a couple of years ago, and I spoke to someone who, like, he was really into just kind of making himself disappear. But he also used an Apple product. I don't remember what he used, if it was a laptop or something. But I remember asking him about that because he did make a point in saying that he actually does trust the security of Apple. Mm-hmm. But I turned around and I said, I do know that they have plans in the future to start getting into the ad space. So while they're very pro-privacy, I'm kind of seeing that, and I'm kind of looking at the winds of change, and I'm thinking that they're kind of looking to monopolize on that user data to start giving out personalized ads within their own vertical.
Don't forget, bend the knee to the current administration. Your data's done for.
Well, that, I mean, is that sort of like you're thinking like the Cloudflare model where you encrypt everyone's DNS queries, so then your data becomes more valuable because nobody else can see it?
I'm sorry, in terms of like, Apple?
I was just as an Apple. So it's very secure. The outside guy can't view what you're doing, right? So like an ISP can't see your DNS queries and whatever you're doing. But Cloudflare can, and Cloudflare knows who you are and what you're looking at, and then they could sort of sell your data downstream.
So that's kind of the beautiful thing in what Apple is telling their customers versus what's actually going on or what's being planned to go on. I don't know exactly where they are in their timeline, but what they are saying is true, that they will never sell data at a certain, you know, like they're not looking to sell that data elsewhere. What they're looking to do is to go to, you know, let's say Adidas or, you know, Under Armour or whatever, and say, hey, we have all of these people that would be interested. Like, let's create a partnership where we won't give you their data, But we'll create a contract where you send us millions of dollars and we'll send you leads. So it's not like they're necessarily selling that data to other marketing firms or other like data collection agencies. It's going directly to generate leads for a company, like, and not just a middleman. So they're kind of looking to take out the middleman entirely, which obviously that's not better. I don't think that's the better model. But their claim is that they care about privacy, but they're claiming that so that they can kind of have the proprietary, like they hold your data and no one else can touch it.
You guys want some?
Well, yeah. So there's one thing iCloud is kind of one aspect of the Apple world, you know, and then what happens on your desktop and your phone, you know, and they're quite distinct realms. So should we talk about Amazon Web Services also and their view of security? You know, that's kind of, they've got an interesting take on it. I mean, you know, there's such distinctions between Amazon on the retail side and what they, you know, harvest from the browser and what's going on in Amazon Web Services. You know, that was, so how, what's your sense of the security of Amazon Web Services, which is, I think, a whole different realm from what's happening on the retail side?
Yeah, I mean, your security on that front is only going to be as good as how you configure it, really.
Yes.
It's which is where the human element comes in.
Yeah, it's up to the essentially the person, the entity, and how the entity subscribes and uses Amazon Web Services. So Amazon Web Services gives you the opportunity to be very secure, but you have to be very sophisticated in using those tools. Would that be fair?
Even sophisticated people get it wrong still.
Like,
I mean, and that's considered one of the top 10 vulnerabilities is like a security misconfiguration.
Speaking of that, usually people leave their API keys in their public GitHubs.
Mark,
I mean, you know.
Usually this is like a common thing.
Yes, that is a very common thing.
Yeah, nothing is secure.
Because
every organization is going to have one idiot wandering around in it like that.
So is Microsoft, is your anger about Microsoft deeper than the news cycle? I mean, are they really worse than the world at large?
Yes. So if let me just put it plainly, if I may.
Sure.
They have pimped out the concept of a U.S. security clearance to one of our geopolitical adversaries for over a decade.
And so what don't we know about?
Damn.
Well, it's more explicit. You know, this is something that's come to light. That's, you know, it's just a closer encounter of the third kind, or maybe the second kind, because it's not clear how they've used that in a malignant way. But that's a very valid concern, right? It's clear that they have access and can have planted things in a very nefarious way. And now we're left with, when are they going to exploit that?
Right, exactly. So the concern now is we're going to have to look. I mean, this is if they still have it, like a decade's worth of logs, and look at every single entry. And on top of that, like, you would also need to find someone sophisticated enough to go through a decade's worth of code that I guess the U.S. doesn't have, like, that we can't hire that level of sophistication. And, you know, it's very easy with that kind of access. Even if you do have to hold the hand of someone not technical and they're sharing their screen, whatever, you can still drop a backdoor, like, very easily.
Sure. Yep.
No, that's okay. We'll just have AI fix it for us.
Oh, man.
Right? That's all we got to do. It's easy. AI solves everyone's problem.
I'm saying nothing because I'm just staring at, like, my glass, just staring at it in pain.
And how empty it is.
You know, it's you know, you trust, you know, at a certain amount of trust. I mean, you've been living and breathing, and, you know, what you do for a living is basically compromised by, you know, some corporate idiocy. You know, that's pretty depressing. I think drink is an appropriate reaction there.
Yeah, yeah.
We're behind this roadway to alcoholism, 100%.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the realization of that, but also, like, as much as I've said it before, like, I think that what got me really flabbergasted about this kind of situation was kind of the understanding that there really is no end to corporate greed in a way that even if it compromises national security, even if it compromises customer security, even if it doesn't matter who it hurts in the end, as long as the shareholders see their numbers in green.
Yes, people are selfish, which is why capitalism always wins.
Well, it is... You know, this is the nature of the 21st, this part of the 21st century. As we enter into the second quarter here, you know, it's like, yeah, this is pretty a pretty depressing realization of the world we live in, enabled by technology. It's certainly the promise that we thought we had on this, you know. Now, are there parallels, right? Was nuclear energy in the 60s? You know, on one hand, we had the bomb. On the other hand, we had the vision of free and ready power in the nuclear age, right? Had both those sides. Is what we're seeing in AI and cybersecurity, you know, yet again another manifestation of, you know, the human condition?
Wait, I saw a lot of good things come from nuclear power. What right. good things are actually coming from AI, do you see?
You know, it was like, it's a split decision. I mean, makes my life easier, you know. I use it at work, kind of. Here's the thing. I had like a dozen emails of corporate babble, and I'll be damned. Fed it into our little local version of AI, and I have the feeling that that's pretty well, you know, under the umbrella and fairly as secure as anything is these days. And I got a great summarization. It was like, okay, here's what you guys said. Sounds good to me. I couldn't have done it better.
And also, you know? Another implementation of AI. If I plug into that little thing, I say I have chicken breast, I have pink oyster mushrooms, I have peanut butter, and I have half and half. It'll give me ideas.
You know, now, is it possible to do tremendous evil? Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but there's
very much so.
If I have my own LLMs
running locally too.
Right.
If I may use this opportunity to, go ahead, Phil.
I was just going to say that after years of staying completely clear of facial recognition, I wound up with a new M4 kind of, you know, and all of a sudden I realized that it was like, look at the photos I can find, you know, and I thought about it a little bit going, well, you fools, this is. You know, no great technical sophistication, and now I can find my photos.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
It's like, oh, you know, and again, completely wise, open about how AI on the battlefield is like a tremendously smart bombs. What's the oxymoron about us? If a bomb is so smart, why is it a bomb? You know, and
that was part of the plot of Dark Star. the atomic bomb that was so self-aware.
But we shouldn't stray from the evil of this Microsoft fault and the realization of either the combination of greed and ignorance is just right. You know, the awful part of what's happening in the world at large these days, for sure.
Yeah. And bad also, combination. Like the secrecy, I think, too. Like, not that I trust Microsoft to be like, we won't stand for this, but if enough people didn't know that that was happening, and it was happening for over a decade, meaning these people were on Microsoft's payroll, the ineptitude is shocking to me. It really is.
What's happening right now that we don't know about is the scariest part.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, exactly. But I would like to just use the AI and security conversation to bleed into another topic. This just happened, I think, last week, that ChatGPT got caught. The shared conversations on ChatGPT were searchable on search engines like Google. And
that's super out in the wild.
So, yep, that it's once users click the share conversation because they want to share with their friends how funny or cool chat was being, then they're prompted to generate a link. And that link was crawled. Like, Google has that link, which means that it has the conversation.
So, A plus.
So
it got crawled.
Yes. Yeah. So even after ChatGPT told the users who shared the link, who said this conversation is private, you know, as you know, just share it with whoever you want, but those people will have the conversation and no one else will. And while this was being reported, ChatGPT started deleting, I think, what was it, like, I think 80,000 shared conversations, just tried quietly deleting as much as it could, while the issue still persisted. So more conversations were still being generated, and they got caught with, you know, they got caught with their pants down. And they're still doing what they're doing with their pants down.
So I've gotten very judgmental in my old age. I, you know, draw a line down a piece of paper, and it's sort of like, well, here's things more on the positive to the right, and here's things on the left. And on the left of that book for me is, you know, Google and Meta. You know, it was ChatGPT. It's not the technology. It's essentially the corporation. I put Microsoft kind of in the middle of that page, by the way. You know, and Apple may be a fraction to the right, and I don't think know that there's, you know, but the stuff on the left, sure, you know, what do you expect from ChatGPT? You know, that was the, as a carrier of the technology, you know, yeah, we're in, it's pretty gruesome. It's pretty gruesome.
Yeah. And all OpenAI engineers are expected to get a $1.5 million bonus vested over the course of 2 years.
What? No, what
good for stellar work?
Where do I sign up?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't have mind being one of those lucky guys, you know? I came close, but
I mean, they're being rewarded for, you know, I mean, sure, actions. They're breaking barriers, but like, there's also, you know, let's remember basics, folks, right? Like, let's not allow private conversations to be easily accessed. Yeah. I mean, and maybe I'm old fashioned that way, but if a company says that the conversations are private, they should be private. And if not, then they should be held accountable. And then they should also be further held accountable for trying to delete evidence.
So so do we really believe in Telegram versus WhatsApp? I mean, are we really grounded on that? Is that just kind of
everything
what we
will
do for our comfort?
Break eventually, I think.
You're right.
We don't expect anything to last forever. Telegram just happens to work for us, and it's not even necessarily that we expect it to be secure.
Yeah,
Telegram is not end-to-end encrypted by default. So, yeah. WhatsApp makes the claim that it is end-to-end encrypted, and Telegram is not even making that claim. Telegram's normal features set is managed encryption, so
yeah,
you basically just have a TLS encryption to whatever Telegram's server is.
Unless good enough. Do you remember the old good enough encryption?
Good enough.
Right. That was kind of
pretty good privacy. Kind of yeah, you want Signal for something like that.
You want it really is more.
I understand the Defense Department uses Signal for that, right?
Well, unless you have pickle fingers.
Pickle fingers. You know,
they use Teemu Signal. Not even the real one.
Oh, right. There you go.
Lord. We're just gonna use TikTok now for our high-level secret communications. Let's TikTok it right out there. Tell other people
imagine
just to ignore
it. A TikTok dance for an attack on the Houthi. Like the Houthi raid TikTok dance.
There are many ways to encode information.
Yeah. Funnily enough, the Signal app that they were using, which archives all the Signal messages that are sent between
the group
these high level government operators, was created by an Israeli intelligence company.
Of course it was. What was the name of that Israeli company that had that very effective?
Let's find out. Bird?
That was the. So just as a reminder, the last thing that escaped from Pandora's box was hope.
No, it didn't escape. She closed the box before hope escaped.
Yeah, I didn't. You're such a classicist, Joe. I didn't know that. I think you know it because you read it on Wiki.
Yeah.
Do not say that to me.
Joe read all the classics. He's going to bring back the Renaissance.
I read a lot when I was a kid. Books are nice. I really dug Greek mythology.
I dug the Cliff Notes. That was the, So do you think
anybody listening to the show wants to keep on listening? We will be moving into an after show at the top of the hour.
The actual
broadcast will switch over to the next show on WGXC's agenda. But you want to stick with us, head on over to WGXC.org, click on the listen button, and a whole bunch of cool things will pop up. We're towards the bottom. Just look for Thingularity. Sorry, Phil.
I wanted to mention about Pandora's box. You know, all the things out of Pandora's box were like demons, death, disease. Why do you think hope is any different? Abandon all ye all hope. Abandon it. It's the last demon.
The last demon.
That's when you put it back.
Hope is good. It can do a lot of good things. It's when somebody destroys hope that true evil comes about. Never take someone's hope, because the only thing they will have left after that is revenge.
And yes, exactly.
But if you have no hope, you have no room for disappointment.
There's that.
Then what's the point of living?
Or delusion.
To become a corporate slave.
Yes.
There you go.
My purpose in life is to increase shareholder value.
Yes.
I don't know about the rest of you, but...
I wanted to be a PowerPoint pitch when I grew up.
Next slide. Next slide.
Oh, Lord.
So that's where that whole thing came from for Tom, by the way. I was like...
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, just wait for the after show, folks. Then we let loose.
Yeah. I have been playing a little drinking game for myself. Every time I get angry or disappointed or frustrated or...
I finish the bottle.
I'm taking a little sip, and I don't know where I am and how many little pours I've had.
Will not say.
But
it might be more.
I'm prepping for the after show.
Okay.
And then Mackenzie's rage will be unleashed from Pandora's box.
Oh, that wasn't your rage?
No.
Okay. No, that was measured. She was controlling herself on that one.
That That was like at a meeting.
Cody's holding her back, man. You kidding me?
That was, you know what that was? That's like when your mom calls you from wherever you are, hanging out with your friends, and instead of calling you by the nickname she uses your full name.
Mm.
And we'll do so very calmly. Mm. But when you hear that full name, you know, get your, you know what, right back home. You know, it's one of those.
Hey, if you guys wanted to put some numbers on the as far as Apple and as far as how Apple compares to, say, Androids for how much data they collect, a study on this, they measured all the network transmissions of a stock Android and a stock iPhone. And the iPhone transmitted about 52 kilobytes in 12 hour period. And the stock Android phone transmitted a megabyte.
So, oh my God.
Oh yeah. No. Android is that weird, like, it can either really go after you or it can really help you. If you can de-Google your phone, it sends almost no data. But like you said, the stock item, Google is up your butt for data every minute. Like, your location, that when you go to Google Maps and you go to look at the traffic, Google knows where traffic is because it's constantly monitoring the movement of everybody's phone.
To be fair, I enjoy it because it shows me where the police officers are.
Exactly. I noticed that. It's iconic.
That is not Google. That is the Waze component that Google purchased.
Ah, but it's part of their maps now. So you can go to Waze and use that too.
Yeah.
So this is something that, by the way, I poured myself another drink.
Okay. But who's counting?
By the way.
Whatever.
Crucial lubricant applied.
Exactly. I think that the reason, you know, outside of the reason, the people that are in positions to do something about this, and by this I mean regulating big tech and where they may be overstepping on our basic rights and our privileges as humans, but also as U.S. citizens. That's not getting done because, A, you know, conflict of interest, you know, they're getting certain funding from certain groups. But also, I mean, just looking at the demographic of the lawmakers and also just hearing enough of them try to explain the internet.
It's a series of films.
Yeah.
No, it's on the top of Big Ben.
I'm so relieved that Al Gore invented it.
Yeah, if you've seen if you saw or heard anything from the hearings about TikTok, what was it, like 2 years ago?
Yeah, not even.
That was embarrassing. I was not proud to be an American.
You know you're free.
You just have to think of it this way: best of the worst.
I'm free, as in, like, my data is free for the other companies.
For the taking.
It's not just Google who's collecting all that data from you. It's also every single app, like every piece of bloatware that's pre-installed on your phone.
Yeah.
Every app that you install afterwards that has
everything you're tricked into installing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So malware.
I think one of the
more adware.
The neatest comments I heard about the whole TikTok thing was, what's the big deal? China can buy it from Google probably easier than harvesting it from TikTok. Right? That's...
I don't know about that.
Well, think about it. You know, how much... So the data broker. I mean, actually, that's a good thing, Hilarity. We should talk about, you know, we should research data brokers, you know, in the modern age, you know, for Singularity. Again, more privacy than security, right?
Hmm.
That's to make that distinction.
Hmm. Right.
You know, it's...
So
I don't know, kids. I don't know.
Private, at least from all the other guys, as Ben said, as released.
And we're rolling off the air soon.
Yep. And your DNS requests. But